Desolation Angel Radio, The Days of the Virus, chronicling it, episode 4, March 18th, 2020. Some music, and I'll come right back at you. Brian Fallon, if your prayers don't get to heaven, I'm going to keep them safe for you. And I think that's an appropriate sentiment. It is March 18th, Desolation Angel Radio, for those of you just catching up. For 8 years, I did a radio show, nothing but music, a couple hours, once a week, once every 2 weeks. It was fun. It was mine. And the world has fundamentally changed. And I have this tool available to me and available to all of you. And it's my obligation, my responsibility to share it. So we're on the air every night for about half an hour, talking to various people about the changes going on in our world. and hopefully trying to provide some hope. If you're just getting caught up or just tuning in and don't know that I'm doing this, back on Sunday night, I talked exclusively myself about much more in depth about that, about why I was doing it and what the hope and the aim is to, I think the world will fundamentally change forever, and it's our job to chronicle it in whatever way we can. And I know a lot of people, and I have this podcast, Desolation Angel Radio, that is available for free and subscription everywhere. Spotify and iHeartRadio and iTunes and Apple Podcasts and Stitcher. And I always give people the address for the archives. They can go all the way back. Monday night, talked with Julie Rockcastle of Green Heron Farm, which is the home of the Great Blue Heron Music Festival, and got some news out there to people about the availability they have out there still of beef and chicken. And a couple words about the Great Blue Heron Music Festival. I talked last night with Clinton Parker from right here in Buffalo, who is on the ground floor of building the Buffalo Mutual Aid Network, which is a non-institutional, non-governmental mutual aid network where we're all pitching in. So many of us who have all done separate things, me with the Nomad Project, other people with their own things, and we're networking to try and see what needs can be met in the community, doing it peer-to-peer and person-to-person, that kind of help. And when I say person-to-person, well, observing social distancing, but doing what we can as a non-governmental and non-institutional group to all of us to give aid to one another and help one another. Tonight, I had a conversation with Richard Leake from Boston, who is more than a friend. He is a brother and someone I love dearly and someone that I've been through some things with over the years. And he and I had a long and good conversation. So if you're tuning in, what I'm going to do is jump to that conversation. For anybody that doesn't know, right now, Facebook, Google, and Twitter and Instagram servers are completely overloaded. They're operating 24 hours a day at the peak they would normally operate at, say at midnight on a January 1st. And the same goes for phone services. You'll hear Richard and I talking about our backgrounds in festival production and event production and music. And as a sound man, I had to come through because phone lines and wireless networks are completely overloaded. So I got that conversation cleaned up for those of you who wanna say something to me as an old sound man, but I got it cleaned up as best I could. And it comes across pretty good, but a conversation with Richard Leake from Boston about his impressions, his feelings, the things he's seeing in what are quickly becoming called the days of the virus. As COVID-19 marches across the land and changes the way we live and in some cases changes the way we look at things. So here's that conversation with Richard. Hi, we're here with Richard Leake, just like I promised, on the voiceover, and I think I talked about it the last couple nights. Richard is a brother and a great friend from the Brushwood community, and we've heard from the Blue Heron community and here in Buffalo, and as I promised, we're going to get some other communities in here and some other voices. Richard, you wrote something as a status update the other day that dropped me in my tracks. I mean, it literally made me sit down. Could you read that to start us off?
I don't know if I could read it, but I can paraphrase it.
Well, please do so, yeah.
Essentially what I said was that,
on September 11th, 2001, I was 30 years old, and the governmental response, as well as the initial attacks, were just so overwhelming to me. You know, I had no frame of reference for anything that was happening. It was scary. And a couple of days after the attacks, my then, I think, 85-year-old landlady, Ruthie, came down and knocked on my door, and she said, "Hey, how are you doing?" And I was like, I'm okay. How are you doing? I'm concerned about you guys." And she said, "You know, I'm old, honey. I've seen stuff like this before. And, you know, I'm worried about you. You know, people your age have never seen this. You know, this is new territory for you. So I wanted to check in on you." And I was reminded of that because of a conversation I had with one of my
no bases after him, but he was, you know, 5 years old
on 9/11. So he's never really been through anything like what's going on with sort of, you know, like kind of unprecedented government reaction and fear and uncertainty. And it made me want to just kind of say something to reassure people who haven't been through it that, like, yes, this is awful. And yes, it's scary. And there's a lot of things that we're going through that are really new. But if you've been through these kind of life-altering things before, you end up coming out of them with a perspective whereby you know that there will be a normal again. And I just thought that was kind of important to put out there. Like, yes, this is really hard, but check in on people and tell them that this is going to be, you know, in one way or another, okay, that there's going to be a normal event. Because that, I think, really helps alleviate what is essentially a fear of the unknown. So that was basically the gist of the post.
That was beautiful. That was beautiful. And it did. It made me just stop. But you're a beautiful soul and a beautiful heart and somebody that I'm so proud to know.
Well, thank you. And it's been, like, I'm incredibly proud to know you. You know, that's what you do with your podcast and, I mean, with your life, generally. You know, you look for ways to help people. And I admire that. And yeah, this is rough, man. I mean, you mentioned earlier, you know, you're a sound guy, and, you know, I'm a rigger. I work in the entertainment business, right? Like, 3 weeks ago, we started noticing everything canceling. And, like, you can see this coming. And it's, I think, for a lot of people, they're really just catching up to what people in certain industries kind of saw coming a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And it's like we're in that, you know, we're still in that holy shit, what's going on moment for a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, you know, my other industry as well. And Ash and I were sitting here literally back in January looking across the Pacific Ocean, and we started running numbers in our head. And we both went, oh, shit.
Yeah, Ash gets it. You know, Ash knows it from my perspective as well. And
yeah,
you know, from your perspective, you know, given, I mean, you know, heck, about 4 or 5 years ago, you know, remember when the bottom just dropped out of the oil market and you guys were all of a sudden just in total crisis management mode.
And that's right where we're at now. It's at sub 20 a barrel. Yeah.
Right. So it's, you know, and at least in terms of the framework of what, you know, of your industry, in terms of that sort of tight framework, you have a plan, right? You know, you guys have an institutional memory, because that, just that small aspect of it has happened before. And to a certain extent, at least in terms of, you know, the work drying up immediately, a lot of people in my business have that institutional memory. You know, when the dot-com bubble crashed and when the housing bubble crashed, like, everything shut down. You know, we're one of those bellwethers. You know, when all of a sudden there's no money, nobody has events.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
People in our industries at least have a framework to get our industries through them, but this is so much bigger because this is everybody. Yeah. You know, and there's no, you know, the uncertainty is, okay, well, how do we get everybody through it? And you're starting to see a lot of really kind of inspiring ways that, like, you know, non-governmental agencies, non-governmental people are just doing things on their own. You know, a bunch of people, like our musicians in St. Patrick's Day, that was canceled all over the place. So that's how I went out on the pitch and live streamed a little St. Patrick's Day concerts. And, you know, people are using this technology that we have now, we never had before, to maintain a sense of community in the face of all this. I think that's kind of awesome and inspiring. Like, you know, I like seeing those little moments of awesome happening. That gives me a lot of hope.
Oh, it does. The Dropkick Murphys save St. Patrick's Day. when their live stream. It was like, it was so cool.
When off the air, I'll tell you a story related to that.
Really? Okay. That'd be wonderful. I'm seeing the same thing, Richard. I'm seeing non-governmental. I'm seeing people just, I had a long talk last night with a young man here in Buffalo, Clinton Parker, who is on the ground floor of the Buffalo Mutual Aid Network. And it's just people all reaching out to one another. And they reached out to me because of the radio show and because of the Nomad Project. And it was like, yeah, let's join forces. Let's do this and let's do what we can to take care of our most vulnerable populations, so that people who are elderly, people who are cancer patients or transplant patients don't have to go to the grocery store or the pharmacy.
And you're starting to see that from you're starting to see that from corporate entities now too, right? You're starting to see things like us getting in the Buffalo area, but like there's a bunch of the big grocery stores around Massachusetts opening up at like 6:30 in the morning for 2 hours only for people over 60.
Yeah, right. Tops did that here just today.
You know, so things like that are starting to happen. I am something of a cynic. I'm so cynical that I think of myself as a realist.
I get it. I call myself a pragmatist when we do know one another pretty well.
Right. But I'm actually kind of hopeful at some of the things that are coming out of D.C. right now. But, you know, they're moving way faster than, I mean, now that they finally got a start on it, let's stipulate that. But, you know, there is a huge impetus, I think,
I want to thank the Brits for that impetus, because mm-hmm. I think what happened was is that incredible paper that was written, you might know the exact college, but in London. With the
economics?
Oh, yeah, with the projected numbers that somebody finally got a hold of that and realized what the projected numbers were and how rapidly this would move without practicing social distancing and quarantining and shutting down large gatherings. And that came out of London. No, but I really give credit to London for that paper and for providing some hard data. To say we need to do something and do something now.
Yeah, and you know, maybe that was the kick in the ass that they needed to really kind of, you know, realize the potential, right? I mean, yeah, America got a late start, but I think that they are really starting to take it very seriously and ramping up. And you're also getting stuff again, to go back to the non-governmental stuff, you know, there's people who are 3D printing ventilator valves, you know, and putting that out there. People with, you know, knowledge are looking for ways to apply it. And what I would love to see is some kind of, you know, clearinghouse where people can be like, hey, I have this kind of knowledge, what can I do? Right? Which I haven't seen yet. So what we're seeing is, you know, these sort of isolated spots where people are like, hey, I have this thing. Hey, I have this thing. You know, the guys with the 3D printing idea, right? Or there's a kid in Washington State who has a website whose name I cannot remember, but I think he's going to change it to GenTracker or something along those lines. But his website has been live tracking every incidence of infection, death, and now recovery all over the world. And basically, it's a 17-year-old kid.
I did see that. His website is amazing. I go check it out.
And it's just about the best live resource for mm-hmm. pure data on this in the world.
And I did mm-hmm. see something today from a friend of mine that it looks like on a national basis they're trying to open source ventilators. And if I can find that later on tonight, I'll send that to you. And because they're trying to open source ventilators and parts and designs and there's some amazing things happening.
And that's the stuff that Fred Rogers, right? Mr. Rogers has the line about like when bad things happen, look for the helpers.
Yeah.
Look for the people who are helping immediately, and it will
you, that will reassure you. And that is something that I'm drawing an awful lot of hope from.
Well, you know, I refer to myself and actually all of us, you, Ash, and everyone we know as fallen angels. I mean, we've all got broken halos and clipped wings, but the thing that, the thing that I know about us, and you know who I'm talking about when I say us, is that as a group, we don't let anybody go down alone. And whatever we can do to help, we will. You know?
We have, you know, a particular skill set in the things that we do that are valuable at times like this. There was one of my favorite stories about sort of natural disaster response is shortly after, I think it was the Port-au-Prince earthquake in Haiti that was absolutely devastating. The first people on the ground helping were a group of guys in the rock and roll production industry. The guy who owns Rock and Cargo, he got planes, he got all this stuff. He started making phone calls, and they had stuff on the ground there hours and days before the UN even got there. And people were like, how the hell did you do that? And that's what I do.
And I know you've seen it, if you've been on Facebook at all, because we all traded it back and forth, the Blue Heron Site crew, is the meme that says, you know what? Let's hand this over to Festival Crews, because those guys can fix anything with a roll of duct tape and a screwdriver. They will probably have this handled in 3 weeks, and we'll get a really dope soundtrack out of it, too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you guys can run a 35,000-person festival, a couple of walkie-talkies, some gaff tape, and a couple of dinky golf carts. I think we can help this.
I think we can do this. But...
And that's the thing, is knowing that there are people out there with the skill set who are used to crisis management and used to, and have an institutional memory of how to deal with uncertainty and crisis, and those people are starting to make their presence known. And that does make me, A, proud, and B, hopeful.
Yeah.
You know? And to go back to what we talked about at the beginning, it's incredibly helpful to have a longer-term perspective. Like, it doesn't take the fear away completely.
Yeah.
But it helps, you know?
And I do think about that because we both know how old I am. And if I track it, I was born when Sputnik was launched. So I got to see Kennedy assassinated and walk home from school. And Dr. King. A man walk on the moon. Nixon get on the helicopter, and just like you, I can tell you exactly where I was at work on 9/11. And so there's that perspective that says, now on this one, yes, I believe that everything moving forward from here fundamentally will change, that it's going to change. And what I hope comes out of it is this realization that we're better together than we are alone, and that we all can help one another. When there isn't an immediate institutional response.
Yeah, absolutely. And just that knowledge and that, you know, memory, if we're talking a few years from now, I think is really helpful and is something that on a very personal, individual level, when people have gone through this kind of thing, will really be able to kind of tamp down the fear when something else happens. Because something else always happens. You know, you mentioned, you know, Kennedy and Dr. King and, you know, 9/11. And I was thinking of, like, you know, Challenger explosion and, you know, 9/11. I mean, how I grew up with, the Soviets were going to blow up the world, you know, all of that sort of stuff. Like, so these fears have always been with us, but we make them normal after a little while.
Uh-huh.
And that's how we deal with it, right? I'll close this out with a story my grandmother told me years ago. And, you know, I had asked her at one point what the biggest, craziest change she had seen in her lifetime was. And I was expecting, you know, I don't know, the television, jet travel, man on the moon. And she thought about it for a second, and she said, rubber boot. And I was like, wait, what? Really? And she's like, yeah. Until I got my first pair of rubber boots, she says, like, my feet were cold and wet every single day of my life. She's like, you know, wars were a thing, you know, these crazy, scary things were a thing. But she's like, my life changed fundamentally at that
as they can seem in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And, Richard, one thing I'm going to say on air, because we know the listening audience for this, is that I love you, and I thank you for being on the planet at the same time I am. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
I love you, and thank you as well. And yeah. Thank you for doing this podcast. And hopefully it's another means of communication and community. And people can take a little hope and help from it. And I think you're doing an awesome job, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's just really, I just think it's important, because now we've got to learn the best way to love one another is by being distant. And talking like this.
Yeah.
And keeping one another safe that way. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Yeah. Richard Leek out of Boston, a dear friend and a brother. And I really thank him for his thoughts and his views and opening up and sharing himself with me and with you all. Because he's over there in Boston doing, what he can do to help his neighbors. The one thing that I've noticed, because anybody who knows me and is a friend of mine on Facebook, I'm very open about what I'm doing right now out in the streets, that after the first of the year, I decided to take the Nomad Project year-round, and had no idea that it would be as necessary as it is right now. I was out in the street today doing some wellness checks on some people and some elderly folks and doing what I do. And it's interesting watching people, because I know I'm not the only one, especially in talking to Clinton last night, there's a lot of us that are out there. And so I say that because if you're listening to this and you're new to this show right now, whoever you are, I want to hear from you. I want to hear how this is affecting you and your life. When we get to the end of the show here in a few minutes, you'll get my phone number, but most of you are friends with me. Most of you that would be listening to this are friends with me on Facebook, but you can find me on Facebook, Kip Williams in Buffalo. Also Desolation Angel Radio has its own page, as does the Nomad Project. You can connect with me there, DM me, and because we all want to help. We want to be that person. Because nobody should have to go through any of this alone. We're having to learn how to do it through social distancing and physical separation. And I actually had to answer a couple questions today from people who know that I've been out in the street and doing grocery runs for elderly folks and cancer patients and doing Nomad Project work. I follow some very strict protocols. They're almost biohazard protocols beyond social distancing. When I walk out of this house, if I'm going somewhere and I'm doing something for somebody, the communication has all been by phone or by text or by email. I have a list of what I need. I go out with gloves and I'm washing my hands constantly, and there's wipes in the truck. And I practice. There's a bandana. They used to call them neckerchiefs. There's a bandana up over my face because the N95 should be reserved for medical personnel, because I don't want to breathe on you. It's not so much me. I assume, even though I don't have any symptoms at all, that I have it, and I don't want to get somebody else sick. And I don't do 6 foot. I do 8 foot. And again, for anybody who knows me really well, if you get within 8 foot of me, there's a Kip look, and you get it. Yeah. And it's been very effective my whole life, and it's very effective right now. But if I'm picking something up for somebody, it goes on the porch or the sidewalk, and then I will text, and I will stand there and wait from a good 10 foot away until you pick it up. Don't want cash, PayPal or Venmo only. That's how we do things. And part of it also is now training people how to do that. And I guess by example with that whole social distancing thing, because that's being a responsible member of the herd. It's being a responsible member of society, because if I get it and die, so what? But I don't want to be the disease vector that kills somebody else or kills somebody else's dad or mom or grandpa or grandma. I couldn't live with that. So, yes, I am out there. I'm available. like I say, and I got tools, as do several of my friends, if something goes wonky in your house where you're not safe to stay in there, you know, we can set up some physical distancing, social distancing protocols so that that can get taken care of. And my big thing is vulnerable populations. And today I added our healthcare workers to my list of people that, you know, it's like, get a hold of me, because they're working 12-hour shifts now and they don't need to be out in the population to either get exposed to it, or if they've been exposed to it, give it to anybody else. So shopping for them is exceptionally hard. So though that's there. I mean, that offer is there, that if you know how to get a hold of me at all. And there's a tremendous number of ways to get a hold of me. Like I said, Kip Williams on Facebook, Desolation Angel Radio, The Nomad Project. My phone number, which I give out freely on the air, area code 504-717-8386. Call me, and we will do what we need to do to help you out if you are in that vulnerable population and should not be out there right now. And this means of communication, whoever you are, I want to hear from you. We need to document and chronicle this, because I'm going to keep doing it every night, and I'm going to keep doing what I do with the Nomad Project every day. And it's not about being brave. It's not about being a hero. It's not about being anything else like that. It's math. I know how old I am, and I'm single, okay? And if I die, so what? Ain't nobody going to stand by my grave and weep, you know, if I contract it and don't make it through it. And I believe there's an 80% chance at some point I will contract it. When I do, I'm going to have to self-quarantine and stop that Nomad Project work and look to somebody else to pick that up. But if I go, no big deal. And I'd rather it be me than a 40-year-old with kids at home, or, you know, somebody that loves them, you know, and would be terribly torn up by their absence in their lives. I mean, yeah, it's just about being a good human being. And I, if I'm the only one, so be it, but I don't think I am. And the evidence that I've seen says I'm not, that there's more angels and heroes out there than anybody can even know. And that's going to be the story of this once we get to the other side. Yes, we will lose people and we will mourn them. And those of us that are left, if I'm one of them left, we will sing and we will dance and we will celebrate their lives. And we will take this lesson forward about communicating with one another, with words. No more hookup culture. No more, you know, dating apps, swipe right onto the next one. Because each life is precious. You know, my friends you are precious to me. And I want to see you make it through this. And we'll all fall down at some point during it, but look to the people that are holding their hands out and grab that hand and let them help you make it through it. You know, my faith has never been in institutions or processes. It's always been in people. And for the most part, they have never let me down. You give people a chance to be good. You give people a chance to shine, and they will. People like Richard, people like Julie Rockcastle earlier this week, people like Clinton, people that I know, like Avi. You know, out there, we're all doing what we can to help and hopefully carry all these lessons forward, that we're better together than we are alone. I will be back tomorrow night. Like I say, I gave you the contact info. If you need something, depend on that. I will find a way to get it to you, even if you don't live in Buffalo. I know people all over the country, and I know there's other people doing what I do that are willing to pay that price and get out there and do it, you know? That's all there is to it. We'll got one another, and we'll get one another through this, and we'll get to the other side. I'll talk to you again tomorrow night. Close out with a little music. Y'all have a great one, okay?
Thank you so much. We leave you with one last thought. We are entering a dark time. It's all right. It's only temporary. More important than ever that we stick together and that we love each other, and together we will survive. you, Peter. Thank you. Cypress of Soul. We love you, baby. We'll be back.
Well, I'm sorry, my dear, and I never thought the end was so near. And now a heart full of snakes, a belly full of rage, left me with a fist full of tears. And now I wave the ocean, wave the sea, and after I'm gone, just remember me sometimes. The water's deep, dark, and blue, and there ain't nothing left to do. Now, darling, be strong, I'll cross before long. I wait on the far shores for you. And now I wave the ocean, wave the sea. And one day the waters will bring it back to me. I never done one thing right. Now I'm saying goodbye. Hell, darling, don't cry. I never done one thing right, and I'm saying goodbye. Hell, darling, don't cry. We're Cheryl from Memphis, Tennessee. Thank you for hanging out with us. Cheers, y'all.